Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Matthew Taylor. Matthew leads the Noble Story Group, a consulting firm that brings an emotional intelligence-based approach to leadership development in education and nonprofit organizations, and is the author of The Noble School Leader. Matthew leads, he's published The Noble School Leader, a practical guide for school leaders and managers seeking concrete strategies for professional development. He has extensive experience teaching in and leading schools, having worked in urban neighborhoods, urban charter, international, private, and magnet schools. Welcome to the podcast, Matthew.
Thank you, Dana. Great to be here.
Well, tell me about a time when you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Yes, I've been thinking a lot about this question, and the answer was clear, although there were many. The one I want to talk about is when I was a second-year principal. About mid-year, I was also a father of two kids under two, and I was feeling completely submerged in work. And I was becoming aware that not only that, I was doing other people's work as well. And that was on me for taking it on. And I didn't know how to get out. And I came to this moment. I often refer to this as my rock bottom moment or my blow it up moment. I came to this moment where I said to myself, I either need to quit or I need to blow this up and figure out a new way to do it. I was stuck in this place of being reactive and feeling guilty for not being more proactive. And so instead of upsetting other people or adding to their already full workloads, I was taking on other people's tasks and adding it to my own. I think about middle manager and started thinking like a principal and started giving myself the permission to look for different ways to do things differently. It really was just a mindset. You know, it was in my head. And what shifted for me was that permission, and the permission allowed me to start looking for things. And we had a principal cohort where space was always made for people to share their stories. And I started hearing people's stories differently and looking for opportunities to change my own practice. And the interesting thing, you know, I got great professional development on delegation before this blow it up moment. And I could tell you how to do it. I could write down the plans. I could do it in, you know, a role play, but I couldn't do it in real life. And so something about that moment shifted something in me so that I could actually start to apply those tools and had somehow had new courage and confidence to do so. It was a mindset shift moment.
Yeah, and I get that. Like a lot of time you know what to do, but you don't actually implement it. And, you know, it takes something, like you said, that rock bottom moment to actually wake up and realize, hey, maybe I should be delegating tasks. So let's move on to talk a little bit about emotional intelligence, since that's sure. What you've written about most recently. So my first question is, how can school leaders leverage emotional intelligence to make transformative growth happen in their schools? And give me an example or two, and you can connect to the trench story if you'd like.
Absolutely, because mine was a mindset moment. It was an emotional intelligence shift. And so basically, emotional intelligence is four dimensions. Self-awareness, like knowing what my obstacles are, and also knowing what my power and my, you know, my values are. Self-management, now that I know those things, how can I actually shift my thinking and my behavior to live into my power and to manage my, what I call my stuff, right? And then social awareness, now that I'm managing myself, how can I see others more clearly and, you know, in the context of my dilemma? And how, once I see them more clearly, how can I engage with them, which is relationship management, in a way that helps me meet my goals? And so, my approach to this, I basically operationalized emotional intelligence into what I call my five square, those four domains, and in the middle, an additional square for core values, what I call my standard, right? My standard is my core values and context. And so what I needed at that time was a coach or someone to help me think through these five lenses about my situation. And, you know, in my book, I would call me there. In my trenches moment, I was what I would call an unintended enabler and a doer. I was bringing the mindset of doing that got me to be where I was, right? I was a great doer as a middle manager, which got me promoted. But being a doer is not the skill set that a principal needs. The principal needs to direct the doers. So I had that mindset obstacle in my way. And then I had a second one in my way, which was the unintended enabler. That's the leader who's doesn't want to hurt people's feelings, wants people to like them deep down, and so shies away from conflict. And I had both of those things going on as deep obstacles for me. And so I was hitting a brick wall. And that's really where the emotional intelligence framework is helpful, is when you're learning a skill and you can pass the test on that skill in practice, but you can't apply it in real life for some reason. And that's where the emotional intelligence comes in. For if I had been my coach, I would have started with, what are your core values here? Why do you care about not doing this anymore? And I would have told you my core values connected to this are, you know, self-care and achievement for my staff and achievement for me. And, you know, then I would have asked myself, so what's getting in your way? What's your stuff? What's going on below the surface? And helped me understand my doer and my unintended enabler mindsets. And once I understood that, then shifting to self-management. Now that I know that those core values are my power and that those other mindsets are getting in my way, what can I do to self-manage? And that comes down to understanding that our narratives, our inner narratives. What were the stories I was telling myself about not being liked, or about leadership means being a great doer, that I needed to shift? And so when I'm coaching and helping people with self-management, what I'm really doing is helping them shift their inner narratives, shift their stories. Their stories about themselves, their assumptions about what it means to be a leader, and largely their story about other people. The name of my book is The Noble School Leader. It comes from the idea of the noble story, which is the name of my group, the Noble Story Group. And the idea there is, what stories do I need to believe? What stories do I need to choose to shift to be effective, right? To be able to challenge people, to be able to do whatever that goal is that I need to do. And so that's what I would do on the self work of emotional intelligence. On the what I call the other work, right? The interpersonal work, I would have asked myself, okay, so where is everyone else in relation to your inability to delegate? Well, they were enabled. They were expecting it. They probably didn't appreciate it if they wanted to grow. And so understanding that better, knowing where other people are, where do they want to be? Well, they probably want to be empowered. They probably want to be clear about what is expected of them, right? Okay, so how do I need to engage them? That's the relationship management piece. And you know what I've found in my work is that always comes down to two things: being able to challenge while maintaining a growing connection. And so the question then becomes, how could you challenge folks and build connection at the same time to begin delegating, to begin giving people their own work? And so, you know, what I do in my practice is to build a learning plan for leaders that's grounded in these emotional intelligence competencies. These, you know, to be clear, these aren't just skills. This is real mindset work, to be able to shift mindsets internally, to be able to see others more clearly, to be able to shift both mindset and behavior to reach goals.
Let's talk a little bit about your book. So The Noble School Leader was published in April. And why now? Why put this out at this time in your career? And I know you've talked a lot about that mindset shift. Is it something you wanted to get out to the broad public because you're doing a lot of coaching now and just have people see, you know, kind of what you've just talked about in this mindset shift?
Right. You know, I developed this approach, this five-square approach in-house in a school organization. And, you know, I came to realize, well, every leader needs this, from the teacher leader to the superintendent. There's something that everyone is that has another level on in terms of these mindsets, this mindset work. And then I saw that, you know, it wasn't just an organization. It was every organization, every teaching and learning organization, every mission-driven organization that I talked to had the same gap in terms of leadership development, in terms of these the more mindset and adaptive skill set of leadership. And it was really about wanting to have more impact. So I started the Noble Story Group. I started working with other organizations and doing the same work. Once I realized that it, you know, everyone needed it in the same way, I thought, you know, if I could turn this into a book, I could impact a lot more people, you know, alleviate a lot more suffering, help a lot more leaders grow. And particularly through the pandemic, I mean, the need and the suffering that I saw related to these, that this kind of work just dramatically increased. And so I really just want to help. I want to keep leaders. I want to keep educators, great educators in schools. And I'm hoping this book will help do that.
Yeah, and I see how like that's such an isolated position, right? You know,
absolutely.
Having, you know, tools like you're talking about and coaching opportunities where people can, you know, grow as a leader. That's really needed now. We don't need that huge turnover that, you know, might happen with teachers. But, you know, if a school has a good leader, you know, it's hard to see a school change leaders every year or every other year. So talk a little bit more about the four domains of emotional intelligence, including becoming an inclusive leader, creating personal growth plans. You mentioned those a little bit. Mm-hmm. And how, dive a little bit more into how you work with the leaders in creating those personal growth plans.
Sure. Like becoming a more inclusive leader, if I had to name the top three things that I work with leaders on that just comes to naturally to it, that's one of the top three. And you know, that work using the emotional intelligence dimensions, it starts again with self, helping leaders see their blind spots, regardless of their own identities, right? Helping them see their blind spots connected to identity, connected to power, and helping them see their relationship to cultural norms, particularly white cultural norms, and how that plays out in their organization. Also, in terms of that self-work, it's helping people see their obstacles to being great listeners. That's really the core competency of inclusion, is being a great listener. So helping people find those self-limiting mindsets around listening, particularly across lines of difference. And then helping leaders see their obstacles to collaboration and their obstacle, you know, their inner resistance to processes that include more voices. And helping them, you know, all of those things, helping them see the impact of their not doing those more inclusive practices. That's a really big step. Once leaders get a full view of the impact, not just on that one person, but on themselves, their reputation, on students, on the adult culture, on the student culture, on outcomes to learning, that's when the real light bulb goes on and people getting a lot of motivation. So that's the self work, you know, the self management that goes with shifting those mindsets. And in terms of social awareness, helping people build muscles of taking perspective on others. Really, that's the muscle of leveraging empathy. And so helping people see, like in the moment, kind of below the surface, if you think about it that way, where is this other person or where are these folks, right? Emotionally, in terms of their values, in terms of their hopes and fears. So that's a really important part of really being able to take that perspective, where others are, where they want to be, or where you want them to be. And then, you know, what they need from you in that moment to get to their goals, to get to your goals. So that's really how I approach it. You know, this work writ large comes down to staying focused on creating the conditions for learning for adults, for kids. And I think that's the uber lens on this. If the leader can stay focused on creating the conditions for learning for whoever is in front of them, regardless of their identities, I think they're going to become a more inclusive leader.
This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. You can find out more at teachbetter.com/podcast. Now let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, there's so much there in what you mentioned about, you know, just having that empathy, getting to know your staff members, learning about what they're going through, right? And that kind of leads into my next question about as we look post-COVID and how to create social emotional conditions for teachers to thrive in your building and to thrive in their own classrooms. How do we leverage emotional intelligence for that?
Sure. I think, you know, asking that question, where are teachers right now? I think the answer that I'm seeing, and I'm, you know, I'm coaching a lot of people in a lot of different school organizations, educators are in need of deep healing and repair. And they've probably been in need of it for over a year, but they've been just running at breakneck speed and not letting themselves rest and repair. So one thing I would, you know, I'm thinking of the Maslow's hierarchy here. I would start with the base of that triangle. People need to heal. And so, you know, one thing I would say to school leaders is, how can you create the conditions in your buildings to help that happen? I think there's a couple things there. Like, one is, how do you create a culture of self-care in your school? Because most schools I see have a culture of self-sacrifice. It's kind of built into our sector, right? We do this work for purpose, to close opportunity gaps, to help children reach their full potential. When you do purpose work like that, when we do that, we tend to self-sacrifice and we build cultures around that. And so I would say to a leader, or even to, you know, a staff, how can you shift that culture? How can you create a culture where taking care of ourselves is a prerequisite to effectively serving kids, right? Taking care of ourselves together, that could be a really deeply affirming and connecting experience and a healing experience. So that's one thing I would say. I think the other thing I'm seeing across the board, back to Maslow's hierarchy, we've just been trying to survive for the last 2 or 3 years. None of us have been learning and growing. And I think a big piece of getting back to where we were is becoming learners again. So how can we as leaders and educators reclaim the conditions for our own learning and growth? How can we create, assuming we don't have another COVID, you know, like situation next year, how can we rebuild the conditions for our learning? There's one thing I've found in this field of emotional intelligence. There's this profound idea that emotions are contagious. And the more power or authority you have in a situation, the more contagious your emotions are. Think about that in terms of learning for kids. The person in your room with the most emotional contagion is your teacher. And for that teacher, the person with the most emotional contagion is their leader. Now imagine if that leader is stressed out and burnt out. What's the contagion? If you're that student, imagine your teacher is stressed out and burnt out. What's the contagion? So there, you know, this isn't just for the teachers. This is for the kids. If we want kids to, all kids, to really be able to learn and grow next year, we need to restart with the adults.
Important, and like you said, I mean, that flows down, right? From the leader to the teachers. And kids, you know, see it if the teacher's stressed out and if they're not happy with their job, right? So
we're
talking a lot about some challenges that leaders have in school. What are some of the three greatest challenges? It could be just kind of in general over the past 3 to 5 years, or maybe just kind of more during the pandemic. What do you see are the three greatest
things? Most of what I'm going to share existed before the pandemic, and now it's just, you know, exponentially stronger. I mean, one is this tension between balancing the social emotional needs of kids and adults with the urgency of academic growth. Post-pandemic, that's an academic emergency in most places. The loss of learning has been devastating, but so too are the social emotional needs of everyone now in the building. And so that tension is going to be 100-fold this year. That's one thing. I think another thing that's new coming out of these last 2 years is the political pressure on school leaders. The culture wars are just blowing up in schools now. You know, there are many places where the word social emotional learning has become, you know, a rallying cry. School boards are becoming violent places. So all of that is being felt by school leaders. And so the emotional weight they're carrying because of those culture wars is I think one of the biggest challenges now. And so those two things, and you know, all just how hard the job is, the sacrifice kind of culture of leadership, the loneliness of it, all of those things, I think chronic burnout is the biggest danger the biggest emergency for school leaders this right now. Always has been, but now more than ever. You know, we see this in the numbers of leaders who are leaving the profession right now. Teacher retention is awful, but leader retention is even worse. Makes me worried about where our schools are going to be in 5 years. And I think, you know, connected to that, school leaders are not getting the support they need to be able to manage all of this. And I'm not blaming their leaders, because their leaders are overburdened and under-supported too. I think something that we need to figure out in our sector is how to adequately support and grow leaders so that they can create the conditions for learning in their schools. And that's, you know, those conditions are largely emotional. Like we've overplayed the instructional leadership tune over the last, I would say, 10, 15 years. Common Core played a role in that, you know. But I think it's time, particularly after these last 2 or 3 years, to start looking at the social emotional needs of leaders as well.
Yeah, like this year, I think a lot of school districts finally realized the teachers eat it, but they didn't really talk about the leaders too much. And like you're pointing out, really, we need to also talk about the leaders here. And
sure.
That talks a little bit, leads into my next question about like, you know, when school leaders are burnt out, disconnected, or underappreciated, what can we do about having like administrators be appreciated more by district leaders? And also, you know, having that appreciation trickle down to the teachers. So it's not just for that staff appreciation week in May.
Yeah. I would start by substituting the word appreciation with care, right? How do we care for or take care of? And I think part of that is a shift in what competencies we're focusing on when we develop leaders and teachers. Like I said, I think we, and I'm a big believer in instructional leadership and building instructional competencies. But I think we also have to build more of these emotional intelligence competencies that I'm talking about, right? The ability to be self-aware of when you are chronically burnt out and be able to build self-management strategies to handle it. I think those kind of competencies need to be emphasized. We need to invest in the holistic development of leaders, but also teachers. I think that this holistic focus would actually help create this culture of self-care that I'm talking about, right? Having every adult in a school building, or imagine even every adult in a district, seeing themselves as a learner. Imagine the emotional contagion that would create up and down a school system for kids, for growth for kids. So it's going after those adaptive, holistic competencies, going after, you know, those below the surface obstacles, as I call it in my book. I think that's what both leaders and teachers need right now.
So much so, I think. Is this something that, you know, in your opinion, should districts adopt, you know, a specific program that would help leaders, or maybe invest in more coaching? I mean, how can people that are listening, that work at the district level, you know, think more about this? Because this really, you know, as you said, it's an isolated position. It's something they really haven't focused much professional development on.
Right. You know, coaching, the kind of coaching I do is building steam in the education sector. I think the easiest thing that a district could do would be to get some coaching for their leaders. That's a person who is forcing that leader to create space for themselves on a regular basis, themselves, and to get a clear-headed look on their leadership, and to focus deeply on competency growth, but in a setting that's not evaluative. That's what coaching really does for a leader. I think there are books like mine that lay out a path. I mean, really what the Noble School Leader does is lay out a path for creating the social emotional conditions that we're talking about. It's really a workbook where leaders and even teachers really can pick a chapter, pick a a mindset area they want to work on and take a self-guided tour. And I can imagine if all the leaders in a building were doing that independently, but then doing it together as well, you're creating that culture too.
Hope people listening will consider, you know, investing in that. And, you know, that's one thing to have those groups of leaders meet at the district, but like have something that's maybe not tied to your school district and, you know, where people can meet with coaches that, you know, they can be feel free that they're not evaluated, that they're not judged for what they're saying or, you know, what they're struggling with.
You know, something else I just thought of, Dana. Another thing districts can do is create some space for this kind of work. There's just no space because we're so urgent about academic outcomes. And because of the pressure of the politics, creating space is hard. We, you know, one thing we do at Noble Story Group is we've created a team self-care check-in. It's, you know, it's 45 minutes to an hour every 3 or 4 weeks just to talk about what we're doing to take care of ourselves. Yeah. And what we found is taking that, let's say, an hour every month to have that personal conversation has a huge impact on the team culture. So there are little things like that too that districts can do.
It's not hard and it takes not too much of your time, but if you're able to just have those check-ins with somebody as well, like you said.
Right.
Out of everything we talked about today on the podcast, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
I think the thing I would like listeners to remember is that our job as school leaders and educators is to create the conditions for learning for everyone. And those conditions are largely emotional conditions. And little plug, I can give you a roadmap for creating those emotional conditions that's grounded in emotional intelligence if you're interested.
Hey, where can people connect with you and find you online?
Yes, you can find me at our website, noblestorygroup.com. You can email me at info@noblestorygroup.com. I'm on LinkedIn, Matthew Taylor, and as Noble Story Group. And if you're looking for my book, The Noble School Leader, you can find that on Amazon.
Great. I'll make sure to include those in the show notes. Well, thank you so much for being my guest today on the Out of the Trenches podcast.
Oh, such a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it, and if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.